Hey everybody, how are you guys doing? I'm Colleen Fabry and this is Venture Europe. Venture Europe is a series of conversations with successful entrepreneurs, investors, and ecosystem contributors where we discuss about the strategies, tactics, frameworks, and failings that they have used and experienced during their journey. It is my personal vendetta to contribute in making Europe one of the most attractive entrepreneurial ecosystems in the world. Big words, hard work, so let's get started. My guest today is Andrei Brashoviano, partner at Accel. He joined the fund in 2014 and works with the team on Web3 crypto, enterprise software, developer-oriented software, open source, security, and financial services. Andrei has led Accel's investment in Sky Mavis, Sorare, and Nansen, among others, and he has also worked closely with Celonis, Instana, Monzo, Personio, and UiPath. Prior to Accel, Andrei spent a decade in the US working for some of the largest equity high-frequency trading firms in the country. Andrei is originally from Romania, and he graduated summa cum laude in mathematics from Princeton and an MBA with distinction from Harvard Business School. Without further ado, let's go and talk with Andrei. Andrei, ce faci?
Salut, foarte bine.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background? I would love to backtrack and understand where and when the love of mathematics was born.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, so I grew up in Romania. Actually, the passion for math goes pretty deep in my family. My grandfather used to be active in math contests, my father as well. So then when I came around, I felt like I had no option. My dad, from a very early age, took me aside every weekend, already as I was 7 or 8, doing math with me. So I ended up being always a few years ahead in school, which caught attention of several of my teachers. And I was fortunate to have a very good mentor and teacher when I was around 10, who really took me aside, and I started doing very advanced stuff with him, that leading to me participating in contests pretty much full time. By the time I reached high school, I had a pretty nice setup where I was essentially allowed to be off from school for months at a time if I only focused on math. So like most kids, I had a pretty single-threaded education, which had its benefits and downsides, but I really enjoyed it.
Do you remember the toughest competition that you've been part of?
Yeah, it's funny. So yes, I was annually ranked pretty high, top 3 in the nationals, and you would have this kind of international selection camps. It was a funny thing because you have actually children of all ages competing next to each other, and you have some of these prodigies whose kind of brains just whiz next to you. It's pretty amazing, right? Where I guess some folks have just much higher clock speed, and they think much faster, and they have this kind of sheer creativity I felt I didn't have. So it was always a bit daunting, but it's fun. It was amazing to kind of see all these folks coming together because of pure passion for a topic, and you know, all of this being self-driven. I mean, it's a point where it's well beyond what any school could offer or teach you.
One of your first jobs was as a quant strategist at KCG Holdings, later acquired by Virtue Financial. What was that job like, and did mathematics bring you there?
Yeah, very much so. So, I mean, in between, I ended up going to Princeton on a math scholarship. I was very fortunate to get a full ride there. It was my first flight to the US. So in some sense, math really unlocked that. But all was pretty new to me. I had an inkling that I'd like to do something investing related, but I wanted to use my background. So somehow I got sucked into the world of high frequency trading, which was what KCG was about. It was a really interesting environment.
Yeah, how does one get sucked into the high-frequency trading environment?
For instance, I took a lot of grad courses in finance. I think it's, if I kind of simplify it, I doubled down on my strengths, didn't necessarily evolve kind of other aspects. I didn't know what it would take to find a consulting job or a banking job or any of that. So through professors, I developed a network in the area and somehow ended up on Wall Street. It was really nice where it was essentially an extension of academia to have a research environment. I was one of 2 quants out of 50 without a PhD, many folks with physics and math PhDs, and this environment of intellectual pursuit, kind of hardcore research being done, but also in a commercial setting, which was quite fun. But at some point, I felt I was lacking a bit from a personal interaction perspective, and I felt there's this whole world outside, which I was missing out on. So I stayed for a few years, but then decided to do something new.
How did you decide to go into venture?
Yeah, so through HFT, I really felt exploring the boundaries of technology. If you look at trading, it's probably one of the most sophisticated industries when it comes to the adoption of technology, the speed, and you know, whether it's hardcore kind of hardware engineering to kind of older layers of the IT stack, if you think about that. But in the end, it's still a pretty niche, you know, while a very lucrative industry, it's still a pretty niche industry affecting thousands or maybe a bit more people. But I really felt you could apply all these innovations in automation and cutting edge of tech into the broader economy. So I was fascinated about that concept. Venture felt like the right way to do that while also meeting some really interesting people. I would say it was a pretty organic journey to get there. Business school helped a lot, which offers an environment of exploration and experimentation. So spent a bit of time with Excel during my MBA years and then came back full time 8 years ago.
Do you remember the first year at Excel?
Yeah, for sure. It was really fun. In many ways, I'm doing many things I was doing back then. We've, you know, always had a small, lean team, very performance-oriented, but very collaborative as well. I still work with many of the folks I worked with back then. So yeah, in some sense, it still feels like the first day.
So you've been with Excel now for 9 years. How did your assessment of founders and markets change?
Sure, that's a good question. I would say it's evolved a bit. I think when it comes to founders, sometimes you tend to underestimate people. And I think this is also a common rookie venture mistake where you tend to spend too much time focused on the facts, you know, your assessment of the market, the company's metrics and so on, and not as much on the person. And I think with every year I've been in this job, I realized both by the people I work with, as well as by the mistakes I've done by not working with some other founders, realize the importance in the people you back. And it's really all about the people we're behind. So, I found it amazing to see some of the folks I've met very early on who've gone on to do great things. So that's been very inspiring. And then also in the market, I think especially around Europe, there's a much, much smaller ecosystem back then. And I think all of us at Excel and myself included, we're early believers in the opportunity in Europe, but I think it surpassed many of our highest expectations in terms of what a prolific environment this could be and the number of iconic companies that emerge from here. That's been really exciting for us.
I want actually to double down on what you said on undervaluing founders and how actually your focus on really understanding the person and the motivation has changed during these years, whereas like maybe in the beginning it was more focused on facts. So how did your, like what exactly do you ask or what do you do now to assess a founder?
I mean, I try to spend a lot of time with the folks I back. I realize these are very long partnerships and the personal relationship matters a lot. I definitely look for a level of intensity that's perhaps a bit extreme, that's often tied to a level of insight that's very unique in a market, which is perhaps not obvious for others. I would call out Sorare here, right, who are building, think of a digital sports entertainment brand backed by sports collectibles. It's not an obvious market, right? And if you kind of look at it the first time around, it's like, hey, Panini on the blockchain, sports NFTs, there's a lot of buzzwords, but you don't quite, there's nothing kind of to pinpoint in terms of a large existing market, right? But once you dig further, you can see it as a company that's reinventing how clubs and fans engage digitally and how you have this global fandom that's incredible, that's moving online. And Sorare is the venue where all these fans and clubs and players meet. It's a much, much bigger opportunity than you can point to from existing players. And it comes down to the founders, right? The sheer grit, their understanding of the clubs, the hustle, Nico, the CEO, had in going from club to club, explaining the concept when it was far from obvious, just kind of the sheer grind was impressive. So all of these elements really convinced me that they're the kind of founders I want to work with.
Love that level of intensity combined with the insight into the problem. So you've touched on Sorare and also like on Web3 crypto blockchain. So let's go a little bit there. What would be your definition or description of Web3?
Sure. I think of it as very much decentralized internet, enabling a true ownership and voice for the users. I see Web3 as a model where the value accrues not to the platform, but to the end users who contribute in making the platform better.
Got it. So you guys also invested in Sky Mavis, Nansen, Sorare. Do you actually remember the first meeting with Nicholas from Sorare?
Yeah, for sure. I think a prequel to that was us going super deep into the game and understanding all the nuts and bolts of Sorare and how the auctions work and just getting hooked. So we actually went pretty deep in that first meeting. But yeah, it really felt like an edge of your seat meeting where you're leaving and you're like, hey, there's no way I'm not going to work with this guy. So just the sheer passion was incredible.
And how does one assess an opportunity in Web3? Because also, like, as you mentioned, it's also a lot of buzzword. It's also a lot of speculation happening in the market. How do you actually assess the opportunity?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we would look at, in some ways, some mental models from traditional investing, I think, do apply, but there are some specific aspects I look out for. One is very much understanding whether blockchain really unlocks a new model. Is this new platform really unlocking opportunity that was not available before? Right? And we've done many investments that benefited from these platform shifts. Think of Supercell, leading gaming company leveraging the advent of tablets, right? Or UiPath very much riding on the automation trend. In this case, NFTs bring true digital asset ownership in a way that you didn't have this before, unless, or should I say, granted by some centralized platform, but then you're bound to the rules set by that platform, right? And you have restrictions whether you can buy or sell or transfer assets out of the platform, as we've seen with skins or digital gaming goods for traditional Web2 games. So we really felt that NFTs really unlock this digital collectibles market in a way that it wasn't possible before. So that's something we look out for, understanding whether Web3 really brings incremental kind of step change value for a new market. And then with founders, I very much look for the right motivations. I particularly like folks who've been grinding through the bear markets. I think it's indeed, we see lots of folks right now trying to build something in Web3. And I think generally, I think that's great that you have more stronger product leaders and experienced fintech entrepreneurs designed to build here. But we also want to make sure the folks we back build whatever they're building for the right reasons, rather than just kind of being opportunistic about a certain market. The folks that have a true motivations are the ones who will be kind of super committed to go through the ups and downs and take the right calls when things are not going as smoothly. And yeah, I would say, 2017 was a great testing ground. Early 2020 was a great testing ground. So it's actually nice to have seen a bit of a journey and folks deciding to build things before the exuberance came.
And also it's kind of clear that gaming and also fintech are being disrupted by this new technology, by blockchain. Which industries do you think will be disrupted next? What gets you excited?
Sure. I mean, I would expand this to many other consumer and social platforms, many marketplaces where, think of all cases where in the Web2 world, you have platforms becoming more and more entrenched and powerful as they gain adoption and market share. Think of models where some of this value accrues to the users, right? Via a token or some other mechanism where essentially the users become owners into the platform and the incentives are a bit more aligned. There are also, think of more enablers, which I see becoming very promising. Authentication being a great example, right? Where you have this trade-off, right, between true authentication and preserving privacy. And you feel, you know, whenever you want to sign up for a bank account, it feels like you're kind of sharing all your history, your wife's history. It's very intrusive, right? So are there ways in which you can authenticate and provide comfort to a third party while still maintaining a level of privacy? So there are several technologies and companies we're exploring there. And then I put this into a bucket, think of the tooling layer enabling Web3 adoption. This is less around disrupting an existing market, but more about a new market that's emerging right now. We see a lot of opportunity in building tools for developers in Web3, security solutions that make Web3 apps more resilient, and also the usage of Web3 apps safer, you know, solutions that improve the identity piece. So there are lots of opportunities, I would say, in this infrastructure layer that I think are necessary for us to experience true mainstream adoption of Web3.
Interesting, super interesting. So let's wrap this up and let's get a little bit personal. Actually, we've mentioned Nicolas from Sorare. So I had a chat with Nicolas just to get a little bit of feedback on you. And then he mentioned grit. When he decided to invest in Sorare, he personally came to Paris to our offices, then shared the term sheet and stayed in town until we could make an answer. Other things that he does very, very well that investors can learn from, he's able to dive into the nitty-gritty of a business whilst being able to see the big picture. And also here, Nicolas has a question for you. What are the top three NFT companies you believe in will be the market leaders 10 years from now and why?
This is awesome. Well, so to Nicolas' question, there are a couple of projects I'm, say, a personal investor or collector in. Some of this may be a bit more random or not kind of full-fledged companies, but I have a big appreciation for them. One of them would be World of Women. I think they have a very strong ethos behind it. It's a collectibles project, but they started with profile photos, but expanded from there. And I think they have a strong kind of genuine community that I think will persist. I have to think of the third one.
No worries, no pressure. Also, another feedback that I would like to read to you. This is from Alex from Nansen. So this is what he said about you. Firstly, he's super smart. He was a mathematics talent as a kid. Secondly, there's very little bullshit. He tells you things as they are in a constructive manner. Finally, he has that founder friendliness that I think culturally comes from having lived in the US and working with an American venture firm for so long. So this is like the feedback from Alex. And also just to give you maybe some inside information, I usually, when I research my guests, I ask different founders and investors to give me feedback. And I must say that you are quite among the few that everyone answered so quickly, so detailed. So meaning that they really wanted to contribute. So I think you did a pretty good job there.
That's great to hear. And I wouldn't be here if it weren't for Nicola and Alex and many other folks I've been fortunate to back.
So let's go to the second personal question. Being an immigrant from Romania, personally, I felt I had a chip on my shoulder. I felt that I had to prove myself. Did you feel the same in the beginning of your career? How did your background influence your motivation?
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel I've always been able to draw from the positives of my background. I was really gung-ho on going to the US when I was 18 to have that feeling of being completely on my own and start from scratch and kind of build everything the way I want to. So in some sense, I find it very liberating to have day zero mindset and full agency. And that's something I've had through all my life, right? Not be bound by anything that's existed or been done before. But I agree with you. It's challenging, right? You cannot rely on parents or an existing network to get somewhere. You kind of have to do everything on your own. But that's been fun.
Yeah, I hear a lot of stories also from VCs that they try to find this intrinsically motivated hustlers. So it's very easy to find in Eastern Europe. And what was the most challenging period in your career? And how did you overcome it? Based on the story that you told me so far, everything just went perfectly.
Yeah, I would say it's also my mindset that I'm not thrown off that easily. I'm a strong believer in continuous improvement, and I heavily analyze past decisions and what I could have done better. So yeah, I should say, I think I've also been fortunate not to have very difficult situations. I'm sure that may change. I think industry-wide, all of us have been fortunate to be largely an up and to the right market, you know, with some bumps, but it's been generally good. And I think when things are generally good, everyone does well. So that may change over time. But overall, I do think consistency in our job is key. I think, at least for me, it's something I want to do for a long period of time. So it's a matter of taking a series of small decisions correctly day after day, as opposed to a one-off hard push. You do it on a one-off basis.
Very methodical of you. What is the best and worst advice you have received?
Yeah, I would say on the best advice side, actually one of my partners very much early on encouraged me to bring myself to work, to just make it fun and really understand the true reasons why I'm doing venture. And in my case, it very much comes to working with the founders I'm working with and with my partners. So it's, I find if you have very strong intrinsic reasons why you love this job, that just makes all the grind worth it and potentially difficult situations palatable and kind of helps you see the long game and keep perspective. So I found that advice very good. When it comes to bad advice, it's more a general bucket, and the bucket being kind of more like this will never work, or just generally discouraging advice. And I maybe also have a mindset where I always kind of look for solutions. Yeah. In general, yeah, I see the glass half full, and I think many good people, founders, and investors can work through adversity or difficult situations.
What do you think makes a great investor?
Yeah, I mean, if I look at my partners, Excel, who've been in this business for much longer than I have, I think their ability to build insight and see around corners, I think, is key. Our world goes through very heavy swings of exuberance and despair, and there's a lot of groupthink, right? So the extent to which you can really cut through that and develop your own view, I think, is really important.
Very interesting that you say that. Also, I read the book The Power Law, and in The Power Law, I learned how Excel used to have this prepare mind exercises.
Yeah, it's a core tenet of our process.
I know that this is maybe a little bit outside of the agenda, but what does the process kind of look like?
Sure. I mean, in a nutshell, it's a matter of doing your homework in a lot of depth before you engage with a founder. We try to go very deep in certain areas, and these can be big topics like security or very specific ones like NFT technology. And in fact, to be very prepared and form a view such that when we do encounter a founder or start working with them, we are properly equipped to provide good advice.
Got it. Your favorite book ever and best book you read in the last 6 months?
Yeah. So in general, I'm a big fan of fiction.
I love that. Yeah. Isaac Asimov.
What's that? So I've read a bit of science fiction, actually more classics like Hesse or older classics. But in terms of, well, an iconic book I always think about is Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand. In fact, my daughter is called Ayn as a result. I love it as a book that champions agency, entrepreneurship, the pursuit of freedom, and technological innovation. So I think it's very aligned with our current world.
Love it. Tell me about a person that had an impact in your life.
Yeah, I mean, I would call out my parents at Excel. I've learned a lot from just a single one of them, and I continue to do so. I think we have a strong culture of mentorship that goes both ways, and I owe a lot of wisdom and learnings from my colleagues.
Happy to hear that. And if so this is the last question. So if Andre from now would meet Andre from, let's say, 9 years ago, what would you tell him?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, it's nothing groundbreaking, but I would say cherish your personal life moments a bit more. I think it's easy to get caught up in a super intense work mode that just never stops, and only increases over time. Also, given how much of what we do is self-driven, so if you're naturally motivated, then there's just no end in sight for the things you want to take on. But, you know, whether these are friends' weddings or family events, I think keeping in mind that this may not come back is worthwhile. Kind of enjoying them when they happen.
Love it. Cherish the personal moments. We can end with that. Thanks a lot for taking the time, Andre. Very much appreciated.
Thanks so much, Colleen. It's a real pleasure to chat.